I think people always expect me as a creative person, even though I'm a CEO, to sort of be defensive and push back and think that AI is going to gobble up everybody's jobs and all that. And I'm like, look, history's proven us over and over that it moves us forward. And then the creative minds, it's what they do with it, their interpretation, misinterpretation of it, that moves us forward. I also think that, which is controversial, but I mean it when I say it, not all creativity is worth saving.
Hello and welcome back to Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry. Brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm your host, Karthik Kasanagar, Professor of Operations, Information and Decisions at Wharton. My work focuses on AI and business transformation and how AI is affecting creative industry. This is the show where we explore the implications of AI for business leaders by combining cutting-edge research with real-world case studies. Things are changing fast, so without further ado, let's dive in.
We are at an inflection point for human creativity. These happen every so often, usually caused by some sort of technology innovation. The innovation this time is artificial intelligence.
Generative AI is transforming the core of marketing activities.
It's not just how things are changing and how we work, but how we create, connect, and tell stories.
On this episode, we'll discuss AI's transformative impact on creative industries, with a focus on how AI is redefining the value proposition for agencies and their clients. The motivating question for today really is AI the best creative partner for agencies and creative workers, or is it potentially a threat in certain ways? To help us explore that, I'm thrilled to introduce our guest, the CEO of Accenture Song and the founder of creative agency Droga5, David Droga. David, welcome to Where AI Works.
Thank you very much. Very happy to be here.
Before we even jump in and talk about AI, I'd like to just start off with, you know, your decision to start your own agency and become an entrepreneur. I'm just curious about that piece, being an entrepreneur myself. What was the gap you saw in the market, or what was the need for you personally that took you in the direction of starting your own agency? And you ran it for over a decade before it was acquired by Accenture.
Great question. And I wish that it was built around a spectacular business plan. You know, you can probably tell from my accent that I'm from Australia. So, you know, I sort of grew up looking at both what was happening in the US and it was influenced by the UK. And my background is as a writer. So I sort of moved into the advertising industry just because I wanted to be a writer. And I moved up the ranks rather quickly and I ended up running a Saatchi & Saatchi in Asia and then Saatchi & Saatchi in London as their chief creative officer. And that brought me to the US. And for all the successes that I had and the learnings that I had along the way and worked with some spectacular people, as someone who is a very passionate creative person, I kept on feeling a love of the industry, but a sort of a disdain of the industry because I felt like advertising had become almost like a tax for people. And most of it felt quite pollutive, but I could also see the power of it when it was done very, very well. And I always sort of go to this go-to observation that, you know, people in Hollywood and the music industry, people invent technology to steal what they create. But people were inventing technology to avoid what we were creating. And that for me was such a stark wake-up call that we need to create better, more relevant, more inspiring, more effective things. I didn't like working for other people so much. And I decided that, you know, if you're going to start something, New York is the place. I didn't have to be for everybody, but I knew I could be for somebody. The scale makes that possible. And my business plan, which really wasn't a business plan, was I just wanted to make work that I thought was relevant and was making the most of the technology, because this was sort of the start of the digital age. And I wanted to work with people that I wanted to work with. And right from the get-go, we just sort of started doing work that was amplified by digital, because digital suddenly made it that you were judged by the caliber of your ideas, not by the media budget that you had to spend. So it sort of gave opportunity and advantage to people that were putting the consumer first, not the media budgets first. And I did that for about 15 years as creative chairman, which was a made-up title because I didn't like the idea of being a CEO, the irony of now that I'm a CEO. So that was sort of my backstory. But it was, I just wanted to make work that I believed in, and technology was an enabler, which is relevant to what we're sort of talking about today.
Absolutely, yeah. And by the way, that makes it two of us. My most recent company, I gave myself the chairman title, and it was AI for creative industry, specifically Hollywood. So there's some of what you're saying that resonates.
Exactly.
You just said that one of the motivations was to make sure what you're making is relevant and making use of the technology that was becoming available. Obviously, over the last couple of years, there's been a big shift in the technology that's available, we're starting to see, even in these early 2-3 years, AI's impact in creative industries, and, you know, projecting out 5-10 years, the impact could be huge. And generally, I'm seeing its impact in many places. You know, now you can talk about, say, in Hollywood, somebody with a great idea can go make short films or make movies without the blessings of the gatekeepers. It's already affecting jobs for freelancers and simple creative tasks like, say, logo design and so on. So I have a two-part question for you. I think the first question really is, what does this technology mean for creative folks? Is it a tool that you see that's going to augment and enable them? Or is it a tool that's going to displace them? And we can talk about it generally or in the context of advertising, which is where I want to focus this discussion.
My response to that is, I don't think it's quite as simple as that, because I think really it's going to change jobs, but not the necessity of what the output of the jobs themselves. There's always going to be a need for communication and brand and design and storytelling and, you know, all these things. How we get there, that is definitely changing. So when we stop holding on to a business model or a role and understand that creativity, taste, strategy, they're liquid. They go wherever they're needed. You know what I mean? And that's why I'm very bullish and optimistic about it. You know, I know we're in the infant stages, but I think people always expect me as a creative person, even though I'm a CEO, to sort of be defensive and push back and think that, you know, AI is going to gobble up everybody's jobs and all that. And I'm like, look, history's proven us over and over, you know, that it moves us forward. And then the creative minds, it's what they do with it, their interpretation, misinterpretation of it, that moves us forward. I also think that, which is controversial, but I mean it when I say it, not all creativity is worth saving.
Interesting.
Now, that's a provocative thing to say, but there's so much things that are deemed creative that are just not. You know, I look at architecture, I look at majority of advertising, I look at a lot of journalism. That can be better. You know, that's quite formulaic. I mean, they're informed and influenced by something far more scary, which is conformity and research. Do you know what I mean? Playing it safe.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we've created tools that get rid of the mediocre middle, then that's going to accelerate the people that actually have the talent and the know-how and the ambition and the creativity to do more with it. Because every time creativity has been enhanced by a tool, yes, we all get intimidated by it. And obviously, I understand the scale and pace of this is unlike anything we've seen. But I think of even when I started in the industry, I'm not looking back thinking, I feel terrible that we don't have rooms full of typographers or still have, you know, rooms filled with illustrators who are doing storyboards. The output is what matters. And when you focus on the output, creatives will always be relevant. The tasks are changing, not the necessity of what people need.
Yeah, I like the way you put that. And I have the same belief that we can break down work into a set of tasks, and no doubt some tasks will go and some tasks will stay and some new tasks will get created. You brought up the point of taste. I think that's really interesting to me. It reminds me of a conversation I had with a producer sometime back, and that context was filmmaking, as I mentioned earlier. And when it came to AI tools, say for producers to analyze scripts and so on, initially the reaction from some studios was, there's no way our creative people will use AI because the AI cannot be creative. Then it was, they feel threatened by it. But then you actually look at the job that's happening and you talk to the people. Turns out a typical person is overwhelmed with the number of scripts coming in, you know, 4 books, 6 scripts to read in a weekend. And AI actually is great for them to understand, what is this about? Does this fit your mandate? Is it too similar to what you're working with? And when it comes to, what does this make me feel? And where do I want stories to go in the future? That taste-making role, it's very hard to not see humans being relevant in that setting.
Completely. I mean, again, it's a lot of what AI is doing is sort of bringing together all the best practices and all the knowledge that exists to formulate something new. And again, it could probably write scripts and movies that are on point with some of the average films that are out there. Of course it could. But it's never going to create something, and you take some people who push into new territories or have context and references that only a human that's gone through the human experience can get to in certain pieces of dialogue. And I think that's why I feel I'm cautious, and I care about, when I say, you know, not all creativity and not all jobs are worth preserving, I don't say that in a cold-hearted way. I mean, everyone deserves to have a job. I just think it's going to give people new opportunities, and it's going to industrialize the imagination. Because when everyone has access to best practices, then something new has to happen. You know what I mean? To sort of elevate beyond that. And we look out in the real world, as I said, taste is actually a real thing.
Yeah.
It really is. Understanding and context are real things. Making connections are real things. And our past is littered with things that allowed us to do things faster and more. And at the moment, it's just allowing us to do things cheaper and faster. There was a big to-do about some big fashion brand that had spent $600,000 making an esoteric commercial with someone diving in the water and swimming in whales and all this sort of stuff. And it was for, you know, a perfume or something like that. And I think they spent 2 months making the ad or 3 months and it cost $600,000. And someone had used AI and recreated it in a matter of hours for, you know, $100, which is extraordinary.
Right.
What no one's talking about is that both of them were crap. Do you know what I mean? Now,
right.
What the advantage of that is you can get to crap faster, so you can move on from that.
Yeah.
But the parlor trick of the technology is never going to be the thing that just makes the connection. It still has to have strategy and insight, particularly if you talk about things that motivate people or you want to move people and stuff like that. But it's same with architecture, same with literature, same with, you know, it can do great things and we shouldn't begrudge that, but it's what we do with it. That's the great thing about humanity, our interpretation of things, as I said, and we're the ones who enforce ourselves into that.
Yeah. And I'm curious how you infuse that taste, that originality in your own work. And I'm asking specifically whether there's a trade-off, especially when it comes to AI use, but there's a trade-off between efficiency and originality.
Well, at the stage, majority of people are still very much in the table stakes, and so they should be. There's great efficiencies to be made, time, money, and all those things. And so a lot of people think that, oh, this is going to solve everything. I'm never going to need to deal with a creative organization or a design company or get, you know, of course. So they're sort of enjoying the reaping the benefits of that. But that's only going to get you so far. Again, our world is to sort of connect with consumers from an emotional point of view, from a commercial point of view. And brands have to be distinctive. They have to be meaningful. They have to be memorable. AI can get you so far, but if everyone has access to the same tools,
yeah,
you'll get the same outcomes all the time. So we sort of add that layer of context and differentiation.
I think your point about everyone having access to the same tools, you'll have the same outcome if you're not careful, is an important one. We actually had a study recently in our research group where we had 250 plus participants engage in creative tasks, mostly creative writing, some with AI, some without AI. And what you observe is that AI used reduced task completion time. It also increased the quality of the writing as rated by independent evaluators. But when all of them were using the same kinds of AI, what we observed was that the diversity of the writing went down.
Of course. I mean, you know, think about when search first started. Everyone thought that everyone was going to be lazy and wouldn't be able to do anything. And, you know, for an instant, suddenly everyone had access to everything and you know, people cut corners and all that sort of stuff. But it still opens up new avenues. It opens up new quadrants of exploration. And I think I also have to believe this, sort of being transparent. You know, my wife is in film. My eldest son graduated USC Film Schools. My daughter got accepted last night into USC Film School.
Oh, wow.
So I have to believe. Now, the cynic in me would be, and I'm a creative, thinking, oh, are they going into an industry that's going to be irrelevant? I'm like, the business model of the industry is maybe going to be irrelevant, but the need for storytelling and movies and evocative and emotional things is never going to. So I really want them to understand the technology,
right,
work out how to bend it and use it and break it and sometimes ignore it. But I'm not so bullish that I'm not aware of the pitfalls and, you know, that we have to be very thoughtful about it and consider. And we have to have a little bit of paranoia. That's also important to make sure that we sort of utilize it and use it in a way that's responsible and fair. And it's, you know, because there's a lot of things that could go wrong as well.
So we've talked a little bit about what AI means for creativity. I want to talk about what it means for the business of creativity. Let's start with the client side of things. What are you seeing in terms of how technology in general and AI in particular is making people rethink roles and responsibilities within the enterprise? For example, what does it mean for CMOs and how is it changing what they need from their marketing partners?
The CMO's role has changed. It was already morphing before the emergence of AI. And they'd sort of moved from being, you know, responsible for just growing brand to sort of growing companies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the voice of the CMO carries a lot more weight than it used to. Or it should, definitely. It needs to be sort of, you know, really in the C-suite. I think what AI is allowing us to do, and I'm seeing it firsthand with Song, which is part of the reason I sold my company to Accenture, and sort of the belief about the necessity of technology just to weave together all the facets of the world I'd come from. You know, we can actually do things, but the excitement of the output is tapered a little bit in the beginning because it's sort of exposing people like, are they ready for it? Is their corporation ready for it? Is their data clean enough? And is at the moment, it's still fragmented and in silos. So there's a lot of enthusiasm for it, but it also revealing when you have the conversations about just how ready is your organization, your company to do that. What's happened is every company out there needs to have sort of a unified customer experience across every facet of it.
Right.
You can't separate marketing from the commerce or from the sales or from the products. You know, they have to be united, and AI is a way to sort of make that tangible and a reality. But as I said, there's a lot of questions. It exposes a lot of flaws that people need to fix their digital core and sort of get their heads around what their data capabilities and is it ready for it?
Yeah. So if the challenge for a lot of CMOs is quite heavily in the data and technology camp, meaning help me get a unified view of my customer, help me understand the customer journey and so on, does it change anything in terms of how they work with partners like you, like agencies? Does it change anything in terms of what agencies do? Because what you're describing primarily sounds like a technology issue, a data issue, more for the CMO interacting with their CIO, CTO versus with their agency partner.
Well, the thing is, and I say, you know, as someone who built a well-known creative agency, the model of that just being by itself from any agency can no longer exist, or it's going to be sort of not irrelevant, but its power and influence is going to shrink.
Oh, I see.
So that's why they have to morph it in. And again, being transparent, 100% why I sold my company to Accenture and why I said yes to this job, because I believed that a creative person should be at the head of a company like this, making decisions that are about brand and consumer, but make sure that strategy and creativity is woven into the data and AI. You know what I mean? As opposed to a nice to have or an addition.
I see.
So there is consistencies and there is ambition and there is an understanding of humanity, because, you know, creativity needs technology to scale. And technology needs creativity to be more human and relatable.
You know, it makes me wonder what you think an ad agency will look like in 5 years. The kind of vision that you are espousing, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but at least what I'm taking away from what you're saying is that it is hard to separate the creative insight and the creative strategy from the data and the technology piece. And part of what you're doing is, you know, coming together with Accenture and now heading Accenture Song is you're bridging the two together simultaneously and taking it to your clients.
100%. I mean, that's our point of difference. I think that's why we've grown exponentially. I'd love to think it was my genius, but it's not. It's more sort of the alchemy of what we have, the sort of unified customer positioning and understanding. And it doesn't sort of leave something on the sidelines. It's consistent. Complexity is something that is one of the great stiflers, particularly at the pace that everyone's moving now.
Yeah.
And it does take out a lot of the complexity as well. Everyone's still in the learning phase. I mean, I'm not pretending that we have all the answers, but we have a lot of the people that have the answers and know, you know, we spend as much time trying to have clients get business ready as well as customer relevance. You know, I mean, putting those two things together. Sometimes they've been separated, but I think some of the holdcos understand customer relevance. And I think some of the other consultancies understand business readiness. I think we're the ones who've sort of interlocked those together because they influence each other and they need each other. And having a creative person at the helm, really that means I'm just a product person. So I'm thinking about not just the integration and the seamless nature of it, but the output. Mm. You know, I always start with what's going to work for the consumer. And that's the best thing you can do for your client is care about their consumer.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear the blurring of these lines between the creative person and the product person. I think that's quite fascinating.
It's necessary. And again, you know, I bang this drum too often. I'm not down on the creative agencies. As I said, as a creative person, I'm bullish on creative people. I just keep on telling the agencies out there, change your business model. Embrace the thing. You know, some of the companies, we bought a great company called Work & Co. and they're a digital design products company. You know, they've created this new model where the designers and the engineers are partners in crime. So that just that sort of harmony between that. And then you've got the sort of agentic thing, which is going to change so much as well, because we spend a lot of time building that for our clients and making sure that they're built in a way that has understanding in it. You know what I mean? That, and, you know, look, who knows in 5 years what it will be. But I like the idea that people who understand people and not just engineers are making decisions.
You've talked about strategically, structurally, what changes you see coming in this space. Let's talk about operationally, like inside an agency, day-to-day work. What are the changes you imagine? And one of the things that AI is allowing us to do broadly is reimagine work in general. And we're seeing tons of money being poured in by VCs and entire industries and functions are being reimagined. With all these investments coming in, no doubt that many of these experiments will fail, but also many will succeed. And so I'm kind of wondering, What are the experiments you're running in-house? You talked about agents, for example. So I'm kind of very curious, internally, what are the changes that you see in terms of how the creative work gets done?
Well, I think that people who can ideate and have taste, I'm going to belabor those things, are still necessary. You know, do I need reams of people who can do translations and storyboards and, you know, things that are time consuming. No, it allows people to get stuff out of their head faster, good or bad, right? So we can just operate at a different speed. And what's the biggest change that I'm seeing in the agency space is, you know, there was that classic triangle that we used to say to our clients about speed, quality, and cost. You can only pick two, that whole thing. What AI has allowed us is to take that out of the equation. You can actually do all three now. You can't outsource to it all completely and just think that it's going to solve everything. But the repeatable, scalable part, they're as one now.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Part of what I said to Droger5 is, you know, part of their superpower now is, yes, they still have the DNA core of being creatively, strategically led, but the conversations and the people that have a voice at the table are technologists as well and data scientists and people that actually understand how things are made and scaled and deployed. And that makes a big difference. And then once creatives get over the nervousness of this is going to make me redundant or compromise me, and they go, actually, I can do things that I could never do before.
Yeah.
That's where it gets really exciting. And we're still at that early stages of that. As I said, everyone out there is still at the mainly at the efficiencies and speed phase of things. But like with all technology, soon we're on the cusp of getting to the, I could never dream of doing this before. Now we can actually do that.
I guess one closing question for you, David, is what's your advice for creative folks who are starting their career now? The world is so different than when you were starting. So for most industries, most jobs, the old ways no longer work. So what would you ask them to do? What kinds of skills or what kinds of approaches they should be using early in their career?
Well, success is not nostalgic, right?
Yeah.
We are. But success is not.
Yeah.
Okay. You can be nostalgic for emotional things and again, the ramifications of things, but don't look back and think, okay, you know, I have to be making a TV commercial or the best team is a writer and an art director sitting together or be open to experimenting more. As I said, have more faith in creativity, but also insert yourself in more places and learn more about it. When I took this job, you know, it was the first time I'd been intimidated and learning in the last 20 years. And it was interesting and fascinating because once I got through the sort of understanding and sort of, I don't pretend to have a grasp of everything, but I've moved past the instruction manual phase into the, oh, what this means and what could we do with it? Because I know that I or young creatives even more so look at things and see the world in different ways. You know, remember, engineers make things and expect the world to work out how to use them.
Yeah.
Creatives and designers make things around how the people work and what works for people. And it's just a different mindset. So I just, but I keep on saying them, just know that you're more relevant in more places than you've ever been before and put yourself out there, push your boat there. Because I creative voices, we ask different questions. You know, we don't just give different answers. We give different questions, ask different questions. And that's what sets us apart. So I'm the one who's saying the model may be broken, but the need for your role, if you're a genuine creative person or a strategist, has never been more in need.
We'll end on that very positive, uplifting, inspirational note. I think that's a good call to arms for creative folks. David, thank you so much for joining. It's been a great pleasure to have you on the show.
Really love chatting to you, Kartik. Thank you.
I thought there were two really interesting takeaways from this conversation with David. The first thing is that while AI is helping automate and augment a lot of creative tasks, the role of the creative still remains. This is because while AI can add a lot of efficiency into generating drafts, into creating early mockups, even creating ultimate visual designs, there's an important role for humans to be tastemakers, to see what actually gets emotional response from the audience and so on. The other takeaway is the blending together of the creative and the product person. David talked about how in many ways, the creative person has to almost be the doer as well. I brought up the analogy that entrepreneurs need to be able to build product prototypes themselves in other domains. Similarly, I think in creative domains, it's the creative, the idea generator, who should be able to use the right tools and create prototypes of their ideas. And ultimately, that ensures that they can go from idea to the final product in a more effective manner. That's it for today's conversation. Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us so you don't miss an episode. And be sure to tune in next time for our season finale. I'll be chatting with Lan Guan, who is Accenture's Chief AI Officer. And we will look at how AI is transforming enterprise strategy, customer interactions, and business growth. This has been Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry. Brought to you by Wharton in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Karthik Hosanagar. Bye for now.
AI is changing everything, from how we work to how we think. But if you want to truly understand where it's headed and what it means, you need more than headlines. You need deep, informed conversations with the people building it. That's where Ion AI comes in. Hosted by longtime New York Times journalist Craig S. Smith, this podcast brings you interviews with the most influential voices in artificial intelligence. Researchers, founders, engineers, and policy leaders, including people like Nobel laureate Jeff Hinton, Turing Award winner Jan LeCun, and GPT-4 creator Ilya Sutskever. Whether it's breakthroughs in machine learning, the future of AGI, or the ethics of AI deployment, Eye on AI gets past the buzz and into the substance. Subscribe now on your favorite podcast platform and stay ahead of the curve with insights that matter. That's Eye on AI.